accessibility aspect of websites is finally getting more attention thanks to recent lawsuits in the US. Is making a WordPress website that is also accessible a difficult process? What are the key elements for creating an accessibility compliant website? Colleen Gretzer is here to share practical information with regard to website accessibility. So let's welcome Colleen on the show and get started. Welcome to Smart Web Creators. In this podcast, you will listen to creators creating amazing things on the web and sometimes just me talking useful web stuff. I'm your host, Davinder Sinkanth. Let's get started. Hi, Colleen. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. I'm so glad that you asked me to be on.
You are welcome. So before we get on with the topic of accessibility, which is making a lot of noise, but people cannot filter out of that noise, why don't you give a quick introduction about your online life?
Well, I've been in the industry, the design industry and development, for 22 years, and I started my business, Gretzer Graphics, in 2003, and that was after freelancing and working a full-time job for 7 years. So I've been in the aspect of branding and print, publication, and all kinds of design, and as well as web design and development. But over the past 3 years, I've actually been refocusing my business to specialize more. And that actually all happened after I was sought out by one of the top accessibility providers to the US government, who knew of my design and technical skills and wanted me to take her InDesign and PDF accessibility course. And she said, well, there aren't enough great designers out there, and there's fewer designers who actually know about accessibility. Well, I didn't really understand what it was. And after some convincing, I agreed to take the course. And I found that I really enjoyed the work and the purpose behind it, which again, I didn't understand that at all initially. And so I found that this was a really great way to combine my design and technical skills. And that was what I had always liked about websites too. And then I started researching and compiling information that I found about accessibility and how that applies to websites, and then also best practices with that, and talking to accessibility experts. And so then I started creating accessible websites too, designing them and doing a lot of custom development work. And so it's, you know, accessibility has become a niche for me, and I can apply that expertise to websites, to documents, and even to branding. And, you know, some of what I've done besides that is teaching it. Earlier this year, I taught InDesign accessibility at the U.S. Department of the Interior. And I actually also plan to talk about this on my Design Domination podcast so that more designers and developers will become aware of the importance of accessibility.
Wow. You've been into accessibility like knee deep for like the last few years, right?
Yeah, I've been doing a lot of it. Yeah.
Okay. As I mentioned in the, you know, beginning, accessibility and accessible website, this thing is getting a lot of attention thanks to those lawsuits that we are hearing and scaring businesses, like from with regard to ADA, Americans with Disability Act lawsuits. Now, is the technical part with regard to building accessible website is getting more clear now, or we developers have been lazy, or it's just the lawsuits that making everyone stand out and take notice of, hey, we've been missing on this thing, which is called accessibility?
Well, okay, so the lawsuits have been falling under the Americans with Disabilities Act, Title III, you know, as you mentioned, ADA. And the ADA standards apply to commercial and public entities that have places of public accommodation, which includes the internet. But there's been a lot of up in the air as to if and how this applies to websites. And well, over the past like 2-3 years, there's been a huge increase in the websites, as you said. There's, especially right now, we're seeing a lot of precedents, you know, about to be set and will continue to be set for a while, I believe. So we really need to watch and see how this plays out. On the other hand, though, we've also got Section 508 of the Rehabilitation Act of 1973. And that specifically states that accessibility, like that actually mentions accessibility with information and communication technology. And so that's websites, electronic documents, software, apps, stuff like that. But that law, the Section 508 laws, that applies to the federal government, whether they're producing that or if a subcontractor for them does. Some of my clients are nonprofits and they've gotten grants from the federal government. Mm-hmm. And so I've had to make documents and websites accessible for them, you know, depending on what I'm producing, a document or a website. So to address your comment though about have developers been lazy, I would say that some have been blissfully ignorant. Most don't know about accessibility, or they might be ignoring it. You know, the ones who do know about it but choose to ignore it, that might be due to laziness, or it might be that they think, oh, well, you know, this doesn't apply to me. But in addition to that, there's a lot of designers and developers and even clients who are like, oh, well, that doesn't apply to my audience. We don't serve anybody with a disability. But most disabilities are not, you know, obvious to us. Yeah. When we look at someone, and you know, and that's, so it's an ignorant assumption. I mean, how would you know if someone visiting your website, you know, you're not seeing them face to face, but how do you know if someone visiting your website has color blindness or macular degeneration, a seizure disorder, or if they don't have a right arm, you know? Yeah. And I mean, I've heard stories in the accessibility community about developers being sued by their client after their client's been sued and had to pay a hefty claim. So now we've got situations where you got not just the clients are getting sued, but now they're going after the designers and the developers because they never brought it up and had the conversation. And they're looking to recoup what they just had to spend, you know, as a result.
Okay, the rules that you mentioned in the beginning, they apply to the government website and the nonprofits which are funded via government. Now, do those rules also apply to privately owned businesses who have their online presence and websites?
So Section 508 is all government related and anything federal government funded. So like I was using as an example, the grant. So if you, like their organization might not be federally funded, but they get a grant for a project that's federally funded. And so that typically needs to meet Section 508 requirements. And then the ADA is going to apply to private non-government.
Yeah, but talking in real world scenario, I think every website should be accessible to some extent. And that is where my next question comes into the picture. I think accessibility is more of a subjective, like there's no objectivity here, like your website is 100% accessible, 90% accessible, or even 95% accessible. Now, are there specific things that we can check to make sure that website is accessible to the maximum possible extent? Like, you know, browsing by a keyboard or a screen reader, or there is even a scale that measures the accessibility in terms of real numbers?
Right. Well, accessible web content means that it's designed and presented so it provides an equivalent experience for users with disabilities. Now, you may not be able to design for every single individual, right? But if you're taking into consideration, you know, all the types of disabilities, you're gonna, and then doing proper testing, you're going to, you know, I think that's doing your due diligence. And the WCAG guidelines, that's WCAG, that stands for Web Content Accessibility Guidelines. Those are the guidelines that tell you how to achieve compliance. And then there's three levels of conformance, which are AA and AAA, AAA being the strictest, and AA being like the default, like the typical. The problem is that these guidelines aren't specific on how to achieve accessibility, like on a granular level. So some guidelines you'll find, well, they're very overwhelming to look at, first of all, but you'll find that a lot of them are very vague and a lot of them are open to interpretation. So there's a lot of gray area around these guidelines. And this is precisely why I'm in the process of creating a course on this, because technically you could adhere to all of the WCAG guidelines and still end up with a site that is not fully accessible. So it's important to understand the guidelines and the purpose behind them, and then do a lot of testing, especially with actual assistive devices, and software, assistive software. So you or a third party or both could do that testing. And there are lots of assistive devices and software, and those could be alternative keyboards, sip and puff systems, which are actually activated by inhaling or exhaling, and then joysticks, which are used to control the cursor on the screen, and they can be manipulated with a hand, feet, chin, and trackballs, wands, and sticks. And the wands and sticks can be used to press keys on the keyboard, and they can be worn on the head, held in the mouth, or strapped to the chin. And then there are also hands-free electronic pointing devices, and those are used to control the cursor on the screen. And then there's touch screens. So take keyboard navigation, as you mentioned. Well, that's one of the most important aspects of web accessibility, and I see a lot of developers overlooking that. I've found that most developers think, well, if my site works with a screen reader, it's good to go. And that's definitely not the case. Vision issues and blindness only comprise one of many types of disabilities, you know, and a user could have a physical disability that causes them to rely on a keyboard. And that could be due to a permanent condition, like a birth defect, an amputation, or some kind of an accident, you know, or it could be temporary. Like maybe you break your right arm or your hand and you can't use a mouse for a while.
So
you need to use a left-hand mouse, or you could, you know, you could still get around the website with a keyboard. And I actually use keyboard navigation a lot, and I don't have a disability. I just find that it's much faster and more precise, but a site must be properly set up for that to work. And, you know, that kind of, that reinforces the point of, like I said, I don't have a disability, but I like to use keyboard navigation when it's available. And that reinforces the point of, accessibility is essential for some, but it's beneficial to all.
Yeah.
And then with keyboard navigation, you'd start by putting the cursor in the URL bar in the browser, and then you just hit the tab key, and it should take you through the site. But it has to be set up correctly. And if it is, then what you'll see is you'll be able to tab through the page to the interactive elements like the navigation menu and hyperlinks on the page and form fields. And when a developer gets that right, the problem I see when they, so they've got the keyboard navigation going and it's working, but the problem I see sometimes is that they've removed the styling from the focus attribute. So they've gone into the CSS and they've set the outline to zero or none. And the problem with that is that, okay, I'm tabbing through the page, but I can't see where I am on the page because the browser by default is going to use that focus property to show what element has the keyboard focus.
And by default, the themes have that, but clients will come, hey, I don't like that ugly thing that comes when you focus the...
Right, exactly. And you can actually go in and style it, you know, a different way, but you just, you know, you just don't want to go and necessarily remove that completely. You can, but you can add some other attributes. Like you could add a thick border, you could add a box shadow, you could do something with the design that works. But yeah, you, otherwise you won't be able to tell where you are on the page. You're tabbing through, but you're lost.
So bottom line is you need to follow WCAG guidelines, and which again depends on how you interpret it, because they are, you know, open for interpretation depending on who is interpreting in what sense, because a designer would interpret in a different way by focusing more on the visual aspect, where a developer would interpret in a more code-wise manner, and he will say, okay, the tab should work, the screen reader should work, and they would not really care about the visual aspect. So is there any work being done to make these things more clear, or is it just like open for all? You make sense of it.
Well, there are some other there's another organization, I forgot off the top of my head what they're called because I go by WCAG guidelines, but there is another organization that has put together just some more, like in everyday speak, some best practices that you can do to achieve website accessibility, but it doesn't get into, you know, every single one of the WCAG guidelines. You know, the WCAG guidelines are more thorough, but again, you have to understand them or, you know, you won't be able to make sense of them. You have to try to, I mean, it's a lot.
Okay, cool. So now we all live in WordPress ecosystem, building websites using WordPress. So we'll just stick this question with just WordPress and not talk about the hosted platform like Wix and all that, because we can't control the things there. But in WordPress, we have all the control. Now, when someone is building website using WordPress, what are the main things to consider from the website structure point of view with regard to accessibility?
Yeah, in terms of the structure, an accessibility-ready theme goes a long way. And those themes, they should be using the proper semantic HTML tags, which means they're not using divs to like convey the like the navigation or buttons or header and footer on the page. They're actually using the proper semantic tags like header, footer, nav. And the difference is that div tags don't have any meaning, but header and nav and footer, those have meaning, and those provide meaning to a screen reader. And they also convey, they convey meaning, you know, inside the page. So if the theme has the proper semantic HTML tags, and it should also have built-in keyboard navigation and an accessible color scheme. Although if you change that color scheme, you have to check it because, you know, it's going to have to meet contrast requirements.
Yeah. And besides theme, like we in WordPress ecosystem are so used to using plugin. We'll just install a plugin for every problem that we have to solve it real quick. So will installing a plugin make my website accessible?
No, I'm sorry to say. I get that question a lot. But there's no one plugin, or there's no plugin, there's no one tool or anything that's going to check everything or do everything. There is no like panacea for this. So no plugin is going to suddenly go poof and make your website accessible. There's still a lot that has to be manually checked, and it certainly isn't going to, you know, go and like change your theme and change all, like if you're using a theme that's, you know, using a bunch of div tags and not using the proper semantic HTML tags, it's not just going to suddenly change your theme. I mean, you got to go just find it, the right theme to have that right structure. Otherwise it's kind of like putting lipstick on a pig and, you know, and it still needs, it would still need to remediate your page content too. Yeah. You know, I mean, when I've designed and built sites that had to be accessible, I mean, I also went through them page by page, you know, all the content, and went in there and fixed that, remediated that. Now there is a plugin that there are plugins that you can use to give the user extra control. So once the site is, you know, once the site is done, I mean, of course, this is not going to be like, this is not going to really help them that much if you're not using a site with an accessible structure.
Yeah, there's a plugin to, you know, add the font controls.
Exactly. Yeah, and so I like Website Accessibility Helper for that. And yeah, so you can adjust, like you said, the text size, and then there's color contrast, and there's all kinds of different things that that one will do. So that can, that adds them, that gives them more control, but that's not going to suddenly like make a non-accessible site accessible.
Now, curious, which theme do you use and which tool stack you have to build your WordPress website that is accessible?
I like Astra for that.
Okay. And do you use any additional plugins with that Astra theme? Like, or do you hand code every page there, or do you use a page builder? How do you develop a page layout in that theme?
Well, when I've built accessible sites, I've done a lot with advanced custom fields, and I haven't used page builders. I've used them a couple times, but not for accessible sites. But I add some usual plugins for security and backups and things like that. But then I also will add that website accessibility helper plugin.
Yeah, too. Page builders are getting there. Like I only use Beaver Builder, and I know Beaver Builder has those options of, you know, selecting a different HTML tag like section, header, footer on article, rather than, you know, when you have, when whenever you show blog post, like normally if a page builder or even a plugin that shows post content, it will just wrap those individual blog posts as div, which won't be understood by, you know, the automated mechanics, whereas you get the option to change that div to article to make more sense of it. Mm. So in case you want to start and jump into page builder world, which fit with your accessibility mindset, I would suggest try Beaver Builder, because obviously the HTML code would be really big as compared to, you know, the normal hand coding part. But I guess as long as your HTML code is valid, it doesn't matter much. And again, this is a debate, altogether a different debate, and I sit on the side of a page builder anyways. So this is more of a code thing, like you use the Astra theme and ACF to hand code everything so that to make sure everything is accessible in terms of website structure. Now mm-hmm. Let's go from background to the foreground. Now, what about the visual aspect? Now, I've seen so many, you know, websites who try to be stylish by showing very small mm-hmm. font, like 14px font, to look that, to give that classic look to website. But guess mm-hmm. what? That 14px font is hardly readable to person who actually don't need accessibility as well. So forget about the person who needs accessibility stuff. Mm-hmm. So how big is the visual aspect, and how big are these mistakes that you see people making in this website building world?
Yeah, I mean, that's a big issue, because when you font size and color contrast go hand in hand. So if you're going to, I mean, you're going to have, at some point you can't use certain colors for text against, let's say, a white background at all. But depending on the color, you might be able to use that color bold and larger, you know, at a certain size. But yeah, certainly when you're using an absolute measurement, like pixels instead of, say, rems or ms for font sizes, it can hinder the user's ability to zoom in on that text. And, you know, good UI really plays a part in accessibility. So if designers and developers think of the user first instead of, hey, this is going to make for a really cool design, then, you know, that would make a huge difference. I mean, if people can't consume the content on the website and they can't get around the website, who cares what it looks like, right?
Yeah. Yeah, again, the color contrast, just like font sizes, color contrast is also a big thing, like using mm-hmm. a light gray color on the white background. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you've seen so many of those fashion-oriented kind of websites that will use this kind of thing to look cool, to look different, but I guess it's a big no-no from accessibility point of view.
Yeah, color contrast is a really big deal, and it applies not only to websites, but also to documents. Those would be documents that could be available on the website, or they might not be available on the website and they're just being, like, say, emailed or given out otherwise. But you've got to have sufficient contrast between every foreground and background color. And like I said earlier, like, size and weight are going to play a part in that. It depends on how the colors are being used. But sometimes there isn't a color that's going to work, and you have to make the color darker or lighter to achieve the required contrast ratio. And this is actually now why I bring up the topic of accessibility at the branding stage, because I've had situations where I'm remediating InDesign files from other creative firms and I have to modify their color palette. I mean, yeah. I will use the colors from it where I can, but sometimes I just have to modify them. And then that requires the client having to, you know, discuss, we have to have a discussion, and then they have to revisit their color palette, or, you know, it's just like, these colors are going to be different in this document and they're going to be different from their other materials. So, I mean, if the colors need to be accessible, they need to be accessible, and there's not much they can say about that. But when the color issue is brought up in the beginning, at the branding stage, then it won't require, you know, this revisiting the color palette or reworking it later on.
Yeah, because clients love their colors so much, like, especially those who are going through a redesign, they will just stick with the original colors. Sometimes they will even stick with their logos. Just do me a new website with the same colors. Mm-hmm. So besides colors, the other things that are on the website, the text, besides mm-hmm. the text, the images and PDFs, Word documents that we attach, what are the important things with regard to accessibility, especially when you're using images, because images is, I think, the second most used thing after text on websites.
Right, sure. Well, most people know that images need alt text, and that's actually good for SEO, and anything that's good for anything that's you're doing for accessibility is actually good for SEO.
Yeah.
The problem with alt text, though, is that most people make the mistake of putting alt text on every single image, or they use too much alt text. It should be really short. Like, it needs to be on images that are essential to the content, but not all images are essential. So logos and charts and infographics and some photos would be examples of essential content, as opposed to decorative images, which would be like design elements, for instance, you know. And then PDFs that are on the site, those should be remediated for accessibility, preferably using source files, because remediating a PDF and without the source file is a pain. So if something was created in InDesign, the file should be remediated in InDesign, and then that resulting exported PDF would get tested and checked, and then that would get put on the website. Mm-hmm. And if they have Word documents, those should be remediated as well, and then those can be posted as a Word or a PDF file.
Okay, and what about the other type of content that is actually getting more popular than images, which is the mm-hmm. video content? Do we mm-hmm. have anything with regard to accessibility for video?
Yeah, so you never want your content to be reliant upon a single sense to be understood or perceived. So mm-hmm. for video, text captions are important. And those would include not only dialogue, but who is speaking. So like it would have, we could have a caption here across the bottom that would say, you know, Colleen, colon, and then whatever I'm saying. And then when it goes to your turn to speak, it would have your name as well. So you'd also have sounds such as music or laughter and noises, even background noises, anything that's happening that somebody, if they can't hear it, they would otherwise need to know what's happening. And, you know, if you think about it, again, this is helpful to people without a disability. So if you're in a loud coffee shop, for example, and maybe you have earbuds, maybe you don't. If you're trying to watch something and listen to it, you would be able to read the captions, even though you can't hear the volume too well. You can't hear the words. And I mean, this also is very helpful for people that don't speak that language natively. It can help them, you know, to see it in writing as well. But the text-based content is also going to help with SEO.
And what about the audio with regard to podcasts? Now, you also run a podcast, right? So
yeah,
what accessibility magic is required in this regard?
Yeah, well, with my podcast, I mean, I post full transcripts on the page of every episode. But I also have a lot of people that read. So they, instead of listening, they want to read it like it's an article. So I make sure that it's not just a transcript. It makes sense for somebody that's reading it. So it's not going to have all the ums and whatever in it. But transcripts are not only important. They're not just important for audio content, but those are going to help with SEO too. And the transcript also helps, you know, if there's crosstalk, if there's low audio, and, you know, again, if the person that's listening may not be a native speaker of the language that's used there. So yeah, those transcripts really can make a difference.
Now, why do you do this accessibility, you know, work besides doing the new projects, the new website? Mm-hmm. I'm sure you get the existing clients with existing websites which are not accessible and you mm-hmm. need to go through. What are the basic things that you check in an existing website so that you can prepare a report of checklist? Hey, you are missing on these things and mm-hmm. we need to work on that.
Yeah, there's a lot to check. So if it's me doing the checking and it's a site that I didn't build, or if, you know, it's an existing site, or if it's somebody else's site, I'm doing the audit. So I do an audit with like 60 plus things that I check for. And then I will, you know, go through certain pages of the site. It's not going to be every single page. What I would typically do is go through and find a good sample of the different elements that I would need to check for. And then I would provide a report of the issues and how to fix them. And you can use multiple checkers and you can use multiple tools and assistive software. But like I said earlier, there's no single one that's going to check for everything. So if you take the time to develop a good understanding of the guidelines, so like when you see issues, you'll understand more how to fix them. And you kind of have to weigh, how are you going to meet this guideline while ensuring good usability too?
And which are a few recommended tools that you use for such testing and analysis? Or those are like
secrets? Oh, you want my secrets. Well, I really like Wave, and Wave is available as a browser extension, and it's also a website that you can go to and put in a URL. And then another browser extension I like is Totally, and that's spelled TOTA11Y. So instead of having L's, it's ones, because the abbreviation for accessibility is A11Y. Yeah. And Site Improve is good, and I like Axe. And then for color contrast checking, I like to use the WebAIM color contrast checker.
Awesome. So you just shared your toolbox, right?
Yeah. and as I mentioned earlier, Astro, yeah, for the theme.
Okay, now we are going to get into the toolbox section, the real toolbox section. Let's see which different tools that you share. So the first question, which are your five favorite tools that power your online business?
My dogs are very excited about that question. You might hear them barking in the background. I don't use a lot of tools. So outside of those things that I use for like getting the job done, I use Pancake for project management for my client-based business. And then for my podcast, I like to use Trello so I can manage like topics and like guests and things like that.
He likes it. He likes Trello.
Yeah, so I really like Pancake for project management, and then Trello for managing the podcast.
Awesome. And which is a recommended web hosting service for your clients' websites or even for your own website?
Yeah, so if it's WordPress, then I like WP Engine because of the ease that you can back up and restore a site. You know, you go to post something and then something happens and like, okay, you don't really have to panic because it's really easy to restore it. And I like that it has a staging server too. And then if it's a non-CMS site, I like Payer, and I've used them for years for non-CMS sites.
Do you use, also build websites other than WordPress, or do you also do the accessibility checks for the websites that are on the platform other than WordPress?
I mean, I could do an accessibility audit on a site that's not WordPress, sure. Okay. But in the past, I learned HTML back in 95 when people were just starting to build websites. So I could code a whole site from scratch, you know, without a CMS. I mean, so.
Awesome. We don't see people like these days.
I'm a dinosaur.
Okay. So which is a recommended email marketing service if you use one?
Yeah. So I've used a lot of them in the past. I mean, I've used Constant Contact way back in the day. I mean, there's better ones, so I don't use that anymore, but I used to use that. And I've, with clients, I've used Vertical Response. I mean, I've used a lot. So for myself and what I really like, I've used MailChimp. I've used ActiveCampaign and MailerLite. And I switched from ActiveCampaign to MailerLite last year because I can get done what I need to with MailerLite for free. And I was paying ActiveCampaign for that before. So I really like MailerLite. So I'm using that now for both of my businesses.
Awesome. So any upcoming tool or service that has caught your attention?
I try not to get too distracted by them. I try to stay shy away from shiny object syndrome. I don't know.
I know you have a upcoming course coming up on website accessibility. So besides that course, which we will talk in a moment, now, if someone is listening to this and they don't know anything, not even ABC of accessibility, where can that person start digging for this topic and try to implement few things and the beginning stage on the website development process he or she does?
Well, I would try to look at the WCAG guidelines and understand those. And I would also, like, while doing that, you know, start with an accessible theme and then use some of these things that I've talked about as well, because that's gonna do a lot. You know, like I said earlier too, a lot of developers and designers don't know about the downloadable files having to be accessible too. So they might create an accessible website and neglect the files that are on it. So it's important to know that as well.
And when is your course coming up?
It is going to be coming out very soon. I've got 7 modules where I'm dealing with, you know, I'm dealing with development in one and color in another, and then like media files and all these different things. And I go really in depth into them. And the other thing that I do is I have in the beginning of the course, I talk about the questions that you need to be asking to the client to find out more about what you need to be doing, you know, which laws they might have to abide by, because they might have multiple laws that they have to abide by. And then also, you know, how to protect yourself in your contract if they say, you know what, well, we're just, I don't want to, I'm not, you know, going to pay, I don't want to pay your price for that. Like, if you're going to charge more for that, I'm not going to pay that. So you need to make sure that you're covered, you know, in case that happens, if they say that. So I get into a lot of, you know, if you don't know anything about accessibility, here's what to ask, here's how to protect yourself, and then here's how to build that site.
Curious, like now there are lawsuits and these are scaring few clients, and they're, you know, without any heart into it, they're getting into the accessibility bandwagon. But do you still encounter people or clients who don't really care about accessibility and they just want to make a beautiful website and we're done with it?
Yeah, unfortunately. And ironically, it's been with a couple of clients who actually serve people with a disability. And they have said, oh, we can't do that right now. Like, we don't have the budget to go and fix our site. And I'm like, well, do you have the budget to pay when you get sued? Because, you know, an ounce of prevention now is worth a pound of cure. So if you're, especially if you're serving people with a disability, it's like, how does that make them feel when they go to your site and they can't get around, they can't use it, or they, you know, they can only use parts of it? I mean, you know, it's, there's something wrong with that.
Yeah, actually. Well, the only way to teach is get sued.
Okay. Yeah, unfortunately, that's how most people are taking notice. They're taking notice because now they have to pay. Yeah.
Yeah, they are actually including accessibility in their websites or in the, you know, the tech team that they have without any mm-hmm. heart. It's just the scary part is they know that they will be charged, and, you know, money makes people do a lot of things, and one of them is accessibility now.
Right, exactly.
Okay, Colleen, thank you so much. And before we wrap this episode, where can people mm-hmm. find you and what can you help people with?
Sure. So my client-based business is Grotzer Graphics, and that's grotzergraphics.com. Mm-hmm. And we offer branding and design and accessibility services. And we create or remediate accessible InDesign files. And we also advise clients and other creative firms and developers how to make a website. And this also could involve brand colors, their brand color palette, accessible. So there, that's where I, you know, will do audits through that business as well. And then through a side effort, a second business called Creative Boost, and that's creative-boost.com. I have my podcast, Design Domination, and that's where I offer mentoring to designers for mindset issues and to help them become better and more business savvy designers. And I'm going to be releasing my course on website accessibility through that. And that is at bit.ly/website A11Y.
Awesome. I think you recently got trademarked for your Design Domination, right?
I did. It took a year and I just got it. Yes.
Yeah. I saw that, like, I think you posted on Facebook like 2-3 days back. Some, I don't know.
Yeah.
I saw it somewhere. And that's cool because a lot of people in the US actually trademark their, you know, things like podcasts and all that. I guess it helps in some way or the other protect your intellectual property, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I didn't want someone to come and take the name. Yeah. It took me a long time to come up with it. I'm like, if somebody took it, oh my goodness.
Awesome. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Have a good day.
Thanks. It's been fun.
You can join the free web creators community to learn and share with other web creators at webcreatorsgroup.com. And for more goodness, just head over to smartwebcreators.com. And remember, be smart, keep creating. See you next time.